Welcome to this Microsoft Virtual Academy course on failover clustering in Windows Server 2012 R2. I'm Simon Perryman, VP of Business Development with Five9 Software, and I'm joined by Eldon Christensen, a Senior Program Manager Lead from the Failover Clustering team. We have a lot of great content today, and essentially, we're going to take you through the entire high availability stack, giving you all of the best practices to build a resilient high availability solution. And we're going to be specifically focusing a lot on Hyper-V scenarios, as we find a lot of our customers are now deploying and managing clusters specifically for virtualization. But before we really get into the agenda, I want to allow Eldon to introduce himself. So Eldon, what do you do at Microsoft here?
I'm a principal program manager lead, and so I actually own the failover clustering feature that's in Windows Server. I actually own failover clustering and the networking load balancing feature. I work a lot on storage and networking as well as Hyper-V. And so with failover clustering, we really kind of drive the high availability story for Hyper-V and SQL and Exchange and file services as well.
And I mean, you're part of the core team that actually kind of does the planning as well for a lot of these high availability themes and features, right?
Yep. So I'm actually kind of drive determining what our feature set is, and then I'm part of the development team, so working through the life cycle. And then once we build it, coming out and talking to people about it, like here.
And I got to say, you know, Eldon is the cluster guy. That's why I asked him to actually come and join me today. A long time ago, I actually used to work for this guy. He was my very first manager at Microsoft, so that's where I have a lot of high availability background, and nobody knows clustering more than this guy, so we're going to have a great session for you today. I'll introduce myself. I'm Simon Perryman. Most of you may know me from my role at Microsoft, where I was a senior technical evangelist for 4 years. Prior to that, I spent about 3.5 years on the failover clustering team, working with Eldon. And right now, I've, the start of 2015, accepted a new role as a VP of Business Development with Five9 Technologies, Five9 Software, and we build Hyper-V solutions. But enough about us. Let's talk about what we're going to be covering today. Now, we're going to start in this first module by giving you a high-level overview of clustering. This will be brief. We're not going to go technical. We're just going to basically spell out the requirements here. We're then going to take a look at deploying the cluster, configuring your network and storage, optimizing for Hyper-V. Then we're going to take a look at some disaster recovery, multi-site clustering scenarios. Eldon's then going to talk about deep dive troubleshooting and kind of some best practices if you have any issues with the cluster, how to go figure out what those are. And then we're going to wrap it up by looking at how System Center 2012 R2 can further enhance your failover clustering infrastructure. Now, let's set a couple expectations so everybody's on the same page with what we're doing here. Now, we are going to be technical here. We're going to start slow, but we are going to get pretty deep here. So we do expect people to have a basic understanding, basic knowledge of Windows Server, how to go and create, deploy Windows Server, install an operating system, and then some basic skills around storage and network management. Beyond that, you don't need to have any other prior cluster knowledge and experience. We're going to walk you through everything you need to know to get up and running. Now, if you have any experience with virtualization, that's certainly going to help, as we're going to be talking about how to optimize virtual machines on a cluster, with the assumption that you already know what a VM is, how a VM works, how to deploy it, and some basic Hyper-V management functionality. One important thing to note as well is we will not actually be covering SQL clustering, nor will we be covering Exchange clustering. And Eldon, you know, these management solutions with SQL and Exchange, they're slightly different. Could you maybe just talk about how the teams are organized and why? I guess we're not necessarily the experts in SQL and Exchange clustering.
Yeah, so there's actually, within the Exchange and SQL teams, they have actually high availability teams within those. So we partner with them. So my team builds the infrastructure, and we work closely with those teams. And then they have high availability program managers within those teams who drive the SQL and Exchange HA stories.
Thanks. Now, let's go take a look at some of the recommended resources to get you guys started as well. First of all, Eldon, Cluster Team Blog, is that kind of the main information site you guys use to communicate with the community?
Yeah, so that's where the development team, we're actually going and posting our blogs. So you're going to find some really, if you're a real geek and you want to get into some real meat, you're going to find some real meat on the cluster blog. That's where you're going to see, we're going to go into some of the really kind of internals of clustering and see those blogs posted there.
And I'll be honest, I still use it. Actually, when I was building my environment last night, I had trouble with one of my demos, went to the cluster blog and gave me the answers I needed. Now, what was kind of funny, I wrote that blog about 6 years ago. It was how to recover a cluster after destroying it. So still useful for everyone. We also have Clustering on TechNet. This is the main hub where you can go and kind of get the official documentation of how to use these different technologies. What's the clustering forum? How would people use that, Eldon?
So the forum is a great place to go and post questions. So if you have a question, sometimes people will post questions at the on the blog site, and that's kind of not the best place. The best place is the forum. So if you have a question, you're having a problem, post it to the forum. The development team is actually going and monitoring the forum, as well as MVPs and other subject matter experts. So it's a great place to get help.
Yeah, best way to get a quick answer, especially if you don't have like an enterprise support contract, right? Yep. You just have like a quick question, fill things out. And of course, you can actually post things like the event log, and people will actually go in and give you constructive feedback and things.
And post feedback. I actually go and read the forum. So if there's something you like or don't like about the product, go post it there, and odds are I'm going to go read it. So.
Right. And final resource here is two hands-on labs that we've developed. These are hosted by one of our partners, so if you go to the TechNet Virtual Labs and you want to do some basic clustering with Windows, check out the first lab. If you want to look at some advanced management with System Center, check out the second lab. And these will actually spin you up full environments. And one of the demos I'm going to be showing you later today actually uses that exact same environment. So a great opportunity to kind of get hands-on with a lot of the skills we're teaching you today. Now with that, let's actually start with our first module here, Introduction to Clustering. Now in this module, we're just going to go, again, very, very high level, walk you through some of these basic requirements about clustering and really building up this topology. So first of all, what is high availability and why is it important? Well, we find that the world's a 24/7 global marketplace, right? If your services are down, your business is not making money. So high availability is really critical for all of your customers, both internal and external. And what we've really tried to do with failover clustering is provide a solution to really support pretty much every workload out there. The goal is just to keep these applications running. Now, in the industry, we find people go and measure the success of high availability based on the number of nines, with one of the most common goals being having five nines of availability, which is about 5 minutes of downtime every year. Now, this is absolutely achievable using these latest set of technologies, and we have many hosting partners that say they are now able to come very, very close to achieving this. So kind of look at where you are today. Think about how much downtime your servers have, and then take a lot of these best practices we're teaching you and see if you can get to that 2.9, 3.9, 4.9, even 5.9 level. Then you're going to have a great infrastructure. The reason why high availability is important, though, is whether we like it or not, server downtime is inevitable. We have what we call planned downtime as well as unplanned downtime. And the whole goal with failover clustering is to make sure that we support both types of these. Now, planned downtime, that might be something like maintenance. I mean, what are some of the most common maintenance operations that we see people, really have to take their clusters down for?
Yeah, so patching, probably the biggest one. So once a month, we're going to release a roll-up package of hot fixes that we're going to want you to install, and you're going to have to go install those. Another one, you want to put a new NIC in the server. So you're going to take the server down for maintenance to go put a new NIC to increase the bandwidth of the server.
Now, how about unplanned downtime? What are some of the most common causes of unplanned downtime?
Well, sometimes I'm walking through the data center and I trip over the power cord. That's probably one of my biggest causes of downtime. But sure, it could be power outages is a good example. Network disconnects. Somebody's doing in the server room and they're moving cables on the switch and unexpectedly something happens. Or switch failure, hardware failure.
And then even things like acts of nature, you have an earthquake, a tornado, a thunderstorm, something that can take out power to an entire data center. We want to make sure that we're going to be resilient to that as well. Now, one of the most common questions that we get here is, what's the difference between failover clustering and network load balancing? And when would I use each? So this course is focused on clustering, but we're just going to take this one slide to kind of differentiate these topics here. Now, when you use network load balancing, this is going to be to distribute traffic across redundant servers. So I think one of the best practical examples of this is something like a website. You have a huge company that's doing internet commerce. You have a website front end, and you have millions of customers accessing it. Well, you don't want to route them all to a single server. You want to essentially distribute that. And so network load balancing is really when we have stateless servers, redundant servers. You have incoming traffic, and we'll go branch it out and go distribute that load across them. I guess what's the main difference with clustering? That's going to be something like when we have a single data store, right?
Yeah, so it's going to be stateful. So NLB is stateless. It's all about having that IIS server. And then failover clustering is stateful. So kind of the main workloads to think about is Hyper-V, SQL, Exchange, and file services. So if you're doing any of those four, you really want to think about a failover cluster.
Good clarification. So again, redundant servers, network load balancing, anything with that single consistent store of data, like a database, that's going to be with failover clustering. So let's quickly walk through how does a failover cluster actually work. So we're going to take you through our 10 steps of failover clustering 101. Step number one, you have to deploy redundant hardware everywhere. And what we mean by everywhere is every component, eliminate a single point of failure. Redundancy in your storage, your networks, your servers, your applications. Just try to eliminate any single thing that can go and take down the solution or prevent someone from connecting to it. Second key point is we require some type of shared storage accessible by all nodes. Now again, remember, we want to have this single authoritative source of data, such as that SQL database or that virtual hard disk for the virtual machine. We want to make sure that all of our cluster nodes can access that single authoritative source of data. And so we need to make that in a shared location. So if my virtual machine wants to run on node 1, it can access shared data. If it wants to run on node 5, it can access that same shared data. And we'll talk about what we mean by shared storage a little later as well. Now, next key thing is, whenever the cluster's running, it's actually writing the application's data to that shared disk. So when you're running that virtual machine and it needs to write to the file system, we go push that information back to that virtual hard disk on the shared storage. Or with a SQL database, we write that back to the disk. So again, that single authoritative version. Now the fourth step, this is a little bit of the internals of how the cluster work, but within the registry, we actually have an internal database that's used for different types of cluster tasks and action and information. Now, this database gets replicated to every other node at the cluster anytime a change happens. This is important because it allows all of the cluster nodes to have a single view of what's happening in the cluster at any point in time. So really the three key things that we try to keep track of, now there's a lot more, but the three key things here is, what are the different workloads on the cluster? So such as VM number one, what is the state of the workload? Is it online, offline, joining, failed? And then what are the properties for that workload? What is the name? What is the IP address? Should it have affinity to a different type of host? Things like that. Anytime one of those states changes, such as a VM goes from offline to online, we go update the registry, we blast that out to the other nodes so they update their registries, wait for an acknowledgement, and then we perform the task. This way, we ensure that if there's a disconnect between my two nodes in the cluster, they both have that identical state. They know what each other should be doing. And that's going to be important whenever we have any type of network disconnect so that they can really arbitrate and figure out who should own a workload, who should not own the workload, so that we have always a single authoritative owner of a particular VM or a particular database. Now, the next key requirement we have, step number five in our 101, is health monitoring. If a node crashes, we need to be able to detect that so that we can take recovery actions and do what we call a failover. So the nodes are constantly monitoring the health of each other. And when one of those nodes becomes unavailable, we're going to detect that and we're going to start those recovery actions. This is, again, what we call our failover. Now, let's say a node has a hard crash. Node 1 was running a bunch of virtual machines and Eldon tripped over the power cable. Everything died. Well, what happens then is those other nodes are going to start doing those health checks. The health checks will fail, and node 2 is going to say, hey, node 1 is offline for whatever reason, we can't access it. It's then going to go and look at its own registry, and it's going to ask, what was node 1 running? Well, node 1 was running a couple of VMs. So node 2 now knows, hey, I got to go recover those VMs. I've got to go bring them online. Remember, all of that data for those VMs are stored on that shared storage location. So we still have access to that virtual machine's data. So we access the shared storage, access that virtual hard disk. If there's a save state, we'll bring back that save state, bring that online on the node, and we'll essentially bring that virtual machine back online. The client reconnects to that virtual machine, and we've essentially gone through a process of what we call a failover. When a failover happens and it's unplanned, there is going to be some downtime while we detect that the application's online and start the recovery process. But with certain applications like virtual machines, if we have planned maintenance, we can actually move those VMs between hosts with no downtime with a process called live migration that we'll talk about a little later. Now, that's the basic steps of what happens in a cluster. I'm going to quickly show you a graphical example so we can kind of visualize those steps one more time. Now, what we have here are our three redundant networks. We have our public network that allows our clients or our applications to connect to the cluster. We have our health network, or the heartbeat network, you can see in the middle. And then on the bottom, we have our storage network. And again, we'll talk about what exactly a storage network is. It could be a traditional storage fabric with HBAs, could be Ethernet-based. Doesn't really matter in this example. Now, our node over on the left here, this is running several different applications. It looks like it's got a VM, database, file server. Not necessarily following best practices here, but it helps for our example. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go and say there's a hard crash. This node goes offline. Well, those applications are going to go offline as well. And after a little bit of time, that health check's going to kick in. Node 2 is going to say, hey, node 1's unavailable. What were the applications it was running? It starts them back up, connects to the storage, loads those virtual hard disks or those SQL databases, and then finally allows the public to connect again. And this is, once again, what we see in a failover. Now, when we want to think about planning here, we're not just going to give you best practices for building a cluster. We're going to kind of give you some best practices for building this entire high availability architecture. So let's kind of look at all these different considerations we have. First thing we're going to want to think about is the hardware high availability. Servers, storage, networking components. We're then going to talk about host failover clustering, which is what we call our traditional clustering here, where we have our physical servers and different types of workloads or virtual machines that move between them. Now, on top of this, we can also build a cluster between the virtual machines themselves. So think about when you deploy a virtual machine, you're going to have an application running within it. Maybe you have SQL within that virtual machine. Well, we actually have the ability to provide high availability for that SQL, that virtualized SQL instance as well. If I have two virtual machines, I install failover cluster in a Windows server in them, we can actually create a virtualized cluster and fail over that SQL application entirely in that virtual layer. So you really have high availability of the application layer within the VM and high availability at the host level for the VMs themselves. So even more resiliency. And we're going to talk a little more about guest clustering in our fifth module. We then have high availability for access to our virtual machines' hard drives. This is by providing highly available redundant access to the virtual hard disk's path. And we'll talk about our scale-out file server again in our later module, module number 4. Now, if you're managing at scale, you're probably going to want to think about having management solutions, things such as System Center Virtual Machine Manager or Operations Manager for monitoring. Well, in our last module, we're even going to talk about providing high availability for these management solutions too, because we want them to function, operate, and stay healthy. And then what happens if you lose the entire data center? Well, we want to be resilient to that as well and teach you how you can have high availability across sites with both our Hyper-V replica and multi-site clustering solutions. Let's go into high availability for the hardware in a little more detail. Now, we're not going to spend much time on this slide. There's a lot of information on here because this isn't really necessarily what failover clustering or Windows Server has even built. A lot of these hardware availability best practices are actually provided by the hardware manufacturers themselves. So as a best practice, when you're thinking about creating, deploying a new cluster, think about resiliency through the hardware. So things such as mirroring, RAID, disk scrubbing, journaling, kind of these best practices that are actually built into the hardware layer, take advantage of those as well. Eldon, anything specific on here you want to call out, you know, around the hardware high availability, any best practices or recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest pieces in my mind is about having that, especially the resiliency on the path in and out of the server. So I think about dual NICs using NIC teaming. I think about dual HBAs or storage connectivity and then using some sort of MPIO. In my opinion, those are some of the biggest ones to make sure.
Great. Now, when you start to think about a high availability as well on the hardware side, we also want to think about having multiple servers. A cluster is, again, a collection of servers. We call these our individual nodes. And Windows Server failover clustering does have the largest scale in the industry. We support 64 nodes in a cluster, 8,000 VMs across those nodes in the cluster, with a maximum of over 1,000 VMs per node. So great scale numbers. We also have a SKU of our Windows Server known as Hyper-V Server 2012R2. It's actually a completely free SKU designed to be a virtualization platform, and it supports all of the same scale, all of the same features. We'll be talking a little more about Hyper-V Server in our later sections, though. Now, failover clustering, it has a great support policy, in my opinion. It's changed a lot, and it's evolved over time. So if you did clustering back in 2003, try it again. Everything has changed. The Nuke failover clustering support policy, to have a supported cluster, you no longer have to have identical hardware. Two simple requirements. All of the components have to have a logo, which means that the original OEM has tested it, ensured that it works with Windows Server. And secondly, the entire solution has to not fail any of our built-in validation tests. Validation is essentially a best practice analyzer built into the cluster that ensures that the entire solution is going to work. But beyond that, if you're actually having trouble using the cluster, you can use that as a troubleshooting tool. Now, I mentioned that Eldon was my very first manager. My very first day on the job, it was right before we released Windows Server 2008. He told me, go build a Windows Server 2003 cluster. That was my task for the day. He gave me the hardware and a 50-page white paper. Left it on my desk and told me, don't ask anyone for help. Your task today is to go build this. So I spent about 8 hours, struggled through it, tried to follow the guide, kind of got things pieced together, but I couldn't get the cluster up and running. I couldn't deploy anything on it. Now, this is my first day on the job. I didn't really know the technology, so I walked away going, clustering is hard. Whew. Fortunately, the next day he said, okay, well, we're just about to change all of this with the release of 2008. We've just introduced this new validation wizard. It's going to guide you through this deployment, make sure every single piece is configured correctly. And using that, I got my cluster up and running in 90 minutes. So this is a massive world of change if you tried it before. Going from 8 hours of frustrating experience and failure to 90 minutes with success. So I got to give these guys credit from a while ago. Cluster validation, it's a game changer with clustering. So use it, love it. It's going to be a great tool for you.
If I hadn't exposed you to that, just think, you would have thought clustering was easy from day one.
So. I might have. That is true. That is true. Or if you kept me with that old tool, I might not have stayed on your team for very long, because that was clustering in 2003, different story here. But things are a lot better now. So let's move on here and talk about it very quickly. What are the different storage options you have? Now, we do have an entire module focused on storage, but this is kind of just to give you some of the planning here. Now, as we mentioned, we support different types of shared storage. In the past, this used to be a traditional SAN, but SANs got expensive. So we also wanted to really introduce other ways to have what we call shared storage. And one of the most recent introductions we had was supporting virtual machines running on an SMB 3.0 file share. Now, if you kind of think, what is a file share? You have WackWack, my name, one server can go and access that namespace, and a second server can also go and access WackWack, my name. So we said, you know what, multiple servers can access a single location. That's kind of like shared storage. So we worked a lot on this technology, and with the latest two releases, Windows Server 2012 and later, we support having virtual machines running on WackWack, my share, running on an SMB file share. So a way that we've really tried to reduce those costs of storage. As far as what we can support, I guess traditional HBA, traditional storage, fiber channel, serial attached storage. Ethernet-based storage, we support fiber channel over Ethernet, iSCSI, and then the SMB 3.0. We also support different types of data replication. We'll go into some more detail on that later. But I think really our whole goal around storage, reducing costs, make things simple. Now, Eldon, I see SAS with JBODs here. Could you talk a little bit about JBOD storage spaces, how these kind of fit in with the solution?
Sure. So if you think about kind of what a SAN is, it's just a bunch of disks inside an enclosure with a controller on the front of it, your traditional SAN. And that controller is really just an x86 PC running software. So what we've done is that we've moved some of that software from being in the external SAN enclosure up into the operating system. So that's what space is all about. It's about having resiliency and software built into Windows, which can use just a set of disks without having to need a SAN or a controller in front of it.
Awesome. Now, as we kind of look over at networking, let's quickly cover some of the requirements here. First thing, networking has been made easy. We are fully integrated with the Windows TCP/IP stack. But one of the key things that you're going to think about with networking is configuring different networks based on different types of traffic and traffic patterns. We're going to spend a lot of time kind of going through the details on that. But generally, we're going to have a network for our public connections, our clients. We're going to have a network for our internal communication, such as heartbeats, cluster updates. We're going to have a network for different types of applications and workloads, such as Hyper-V, things like live migration. And then we often find administrators will go deploy other types of network for other cases, things such as backup, managing hosts. And then if you're using Ethernet-based storage, again, things like iSCSI or Fibre Channel over Ethernet, you're going to need a new set of network adapters for that storage network as well. IPv4, IPv6, do we care?
We don't care.
Static IP addresses? Dynamic IP addresses?
We don't care. Either way.
So if we have a DHCP server in the environment, what's kind of the interaction that we would see with that when using a cluster, deploying it, adding a new highly available workload?
Yeah, so clustering, we have these IP address resources which control IPs and moving them from machine to machine. And it will actually just go contact the DHCP server and get an IP just like a normal machine. So fully integrated and get you that same experience.
Now, how about NIC teaming? What's kind of our best practices or guidance? You know, we said we have all of these different networks. Where is NIC teaming supported? Where isn't it supported?
So NIC teaming, we support on any interface. And actually, we even support a converged networking model. So if you want to get down to, say, just a pair of 10 gig eNICs and then team them, and then you can do that as well.
Now,
in the networking section, we're going to go into great depth on that.
I'm sure. And then how about multiple subnets? How does that work with networking?
Sure. So we also, clusters can be spanned across geographies and physical data centers and subnets as well.
And so when you actually go create a cluster, you're going to see this later in our demo. We can be on completely different subnets, and it just works. So that's going to be some of the magic we'll see soon. Now, moving on here, let's talk about things we can actually put on top of the cluster. This is our workload high availability. And this is important for basically being resilient if the host crashes or if we need to do maintenance for that host, whether that's things such as planned maintenance like patching, repair, and NICs, or if we have unplanned failovers as well. So workload high availability, both planned and unplanned failovers. So here's a list of the different highly available roles and features that we see. Again, the most common ones, which are probably, over 90% of all clusters in the world, is that fair?
Yeah, the bulk of them.
Hyper-V, Exchange, File Server, and SQL. We also support many other server workloads. You can see the list here in the middle, so most of the common ones. We also support what we call generic containers. And a generic container, it's almost like a template you can use to make other types of different workloads highly available. So if you have an exe executable file, you have a script you want to make highly available, you have a service you want to make highly available, we can go and integrate that with failover clustering. If there's shared data, such as the actual script file itself, you put that on a shared disk, the multiple nodes point to that, follow a couple steps in the wizard, and you can ensure that this script will fail over between nodes and always run. Eldon, what else with the generic containers?
Yeah, so it's kind of the fifth biggest one. You got the big ones of SQL, Exchange, Hyper-V, and file services, but the fifth one is really about people using, really, Gen App and Gen Service are the big ones, to make any app that you have, internal homegrown app in your data center, highly available. And so we see people using that a lot to make anything in their data center highly available.
And just to clarify, you did say a homegrown application, so this could be someone's custom line of business app. Doesn't have to be a Microsoft product.
Absolutely correct.
Now, what about third-party extensibility? You know, if we have, let's say, another company that wants to produce software that will run on top of a cluster, how exactly does that work?
Yeah, so it's really about kind of when you're making your own homegrown application, or if you're an ISV and you're making an application highly available, it's about what's the level that you want to provide. So we provide the inbox Gen App and Gen Service resources to make anything highly available in a very simple way without any changes to the application. Now, if you want to get a higher level of integration of failover clustering, we enable that. So you want to have better health checks, and you want to have better ways to control the application, you can do that. And we have these plugins called resource DLLs, which you can write for your application, which will allow you to get that tighter level of integration. So if you think about it, a lot of people will start out on Gen App or Gen Service, then they'll maybe go to Gen Script, and then they'll go all the way up to maybe writing an inbox resource DLL, depending on what level of integration you want.
I guess for me, the way I like to think of the inbox resource DLLs is it's kind of like a mapping between tasks which the cluster cares about to tasks which this application performs. So for example, the cluster is going to care about how do you bring the application online? How do you check its health? How do you gracefully take it offline? And so you define that in this resource DLL and basically create a mapping for how this particular application starts or shuts down, how to check its health, so that the cluster can go and test that and essentially make it a first-class resource running on top of that. Let's talk about high availability for our storage itself. Now, I want to kind of clarify here. We're not talking about hardware-based high availability. Specifically, we're talking about high availability for virtual machines using this concept of the scale-out file server. So I'm going to quickly walk through a little bit of history about high availability for file shares. Now, back in the day, we wanted to have a traditional file server. Let's say your Word documents, things like that. We want to make that highly available so that people can always access their Word documents. And so we did that by providing high availability for a file server itself. Now, what this meant was the file server's client access point, whack whack my share, that would be running on a single node in a cluster. If the node crashed, you failed over, that would temporarily come offline, move over to a different node, come back online. So that worked fine for things like files. You know, they didn't really have to be running all the time. If you temporarily lost access, not really a big deal. But then when we started to actually put our virtual machines on those file shares, we wanted to ensure that that access was persistent, and we never lost it. Now, specifically what we're doing with Hyper-V here, with our virtual machines and their access point, this is where we specify the path for the virtual hard disk. So the Hyper-V virtual machine runs on the server, and its virtual hard disk is stored on whack whack my share, my virtual hard disk dot VHD or VHDX. So we want to make sure that whack whack my share, that whole file path stayed online, stayed resilient. So in order to do that and be, you know, make sure that we could do patching or failover for those file servers, we created this new role, this scale out file server. And what that allows us to do is have that whack whack my share running live across multiple servers simultaneously. So what this meant was, if this client access point was running across multiple nodes in a cluster, one of them temporarily went down, we would just redirect the actual writes to one of those other nodes in the cluster. So this meant that the virtual machine could stay online, it could stay resilient because it would always have access to its virtual hard disk. So in our fourth module of the day, Eldon's going to take us through traditional cluster storage, as well as scale-out file server, and how we can ensure that we have that ongoing, resilient access to our virtual hard disks on the back end. Let's talk a little bit about guest clustering. Now again, guest clustering is where we have that cluster running within our virtual machines themselves. So this gives us a couple of benefits. First benefit that we see here is we could create a virtualized failover cluster. So as long as you have Windows Server actually installed in the guest operating systems, it's supported, we run validation, we go build that cluster. So this allows us to do patching, this allows us to detect crashes within the failover cluster, it allows us to restart applications and do failover. Again, helping us protect from both planned and unplanned downtime. Now, Eldon, one thing that I wanted you to actually address is user mode health monitoring. What happens when we have things like a user mode hang or a user mode blue screen? How exactly does that interact here?
So there's actually integration with clustering running in the host partition, which will actually reach up through the integrated components in the virtual machine and actually monitor the health of the OS running inside the virtual machine. So we'll reach up and we'll detect if that virtual machine becomes hung, actually, and the host will detect it, and then we'll go and actually restart or fail over those virtual machines.
So a couple quick questions here, and we're going to go into more details later, but can we mix physical and virtual nodes?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can, within a cluster, you can have maybe your active nodes being physical servers and your passive nodes being in a virtual machine. Now, another thing with this, kind of the primary, so just to give people some context, the main scenario that people use guest clusters is around SQL. So when you stick an app inside of a VM, you can use the technologies, the high availability technologies of Hyper-V to make the VM highly available. But people with SQL traditionally want more. So they'll actually combine the technologies of using a highly available virtual machine, and then they'll want to use the SQL high availability features, whether it be either a traditional failover cluster instance or SQL always on, to get higher availability, as you said, Simon, so in case you want to patch the guest operating system or there's an issue with the guest, they want that higher level availability with SQL.
Now, can you have a physical cluster and then a virtualized cluster running on top of it?
Sure, absolutely, and that's kind of the mainstream scenario people do is they'll have that physical host cluster, they'll have virtual machines, those virtual machines will be highly available, they'll move around the cluster, and then on top of that, they'll have SQL running inside the virtual machine, and then the SQL itself will be another cluster, and those instances of SQL will be failing over across virtual machines, and the virtual machines are failing over across
cluster
the host.
Cluster on cluster.
It's a cluster
fully
on top of a cluster.
Supported as long as everything passes validate.
Yeah.
You'll hear a lot about validate today, that's for sure. All right, so next, let's do a quick overview of multi-site clustering. Now, essentially, multi-site clustering covers us for site high availability. We have nodes in different physical locations, allowing us to survive the loss of an entire data center. Now, based on which type of replication solution you use, you have a lot of different options about things like the distance between the sites, the amount of latency, the amount of data loss that can happen. We're going to dive into details of that later, but key thing here is multi-site clustering fully supported, and we can use different types of replication technologies here. Finally, we're going to talk about some management high availability as well, keeping this entire solution available when you start to go and use System Center with it. A lot of information on this slide. We're going to again go into details on our final module, but key things to keep in mind here is that the actual management server itself, such as the VMM server, you want to make highly available. You also want to make highly available the SQL database on the back end that contains all of the information for your applications, your workloads, and those management servers as well. So we wanted to make sure that failover clustering fully integrated throughout all of our different System Center technologies. This wraps up the first module. We'll be right back very shortly, and we're going to be talking about cluster deployments and upgrades. Thanks.